Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Welcome into the Brad Sessmatt Show alongside Haley Stasiak. I am Jordan Hamm filling in for Brad. We've got a great show for you, a lot of baseball to cover. And then Brad is talking with Jake Plummer, the ASU legend, former Arizona Cardinal and Denver Bronco, as they preview Arizona State and Colorado. Michael Fabiano, NFL senior fantasy analyst, will answer your questions. We are in the heat of it, not only in the NFL, but the fantasy season as well. And then talk to the Lopes with the GCU Director of In-Game Entertainment, Taylor Griffin. And if we know one thing about GCU and their in-game entertainment, they have hit the ground running with that the past couple of years and done a really good job creating one of the best atmospheres, not only in college basketball, but quite a few of their sports. So a lot of interesting stuff coming up here in this next hour. But Haley, let's jump right into it. What took over Twitter last night, what took over, I think, the sports world, it wasn't preseason basketball. It was the National League wild card game. The Rockies edge out the Cubs 2-1 in an extra inning affair. You were just in the Midwest.
I was.
You were rooting for the Cubs. Just what were your thoughts on that crazy game?
Well, first of all, I think that it's crazy that a year ago, it was the Diamondbacks on the Rockies side, and Rockies are on the losing side here. We were choked in Champaign, giving the post-game kind of recap for Sports 360, and it's just crazy that it's been a year. But this game, I mean, yes, I was born and raised a Cubs fan. I'm from South Bend, Indiana, so the Cubs are about an hour and 45-minute drive. I was rooting for the Cubs in this one, but also, in a sense, for the Rockies, because the Rockies have battled all season long. They've been in that NL West, top of the NL West, and to see them go down against the Dodgers on Monday and that game 163 was not exactly what I know a lot of fans of other NL West teams were looking for. But this one, it was fun. I mean, to go 13 innings, one of the longest postseason games in MLB history, and for kind of an unsung hero to get the, not the walk-off, but to get the winning run in for the Rockies. It was a fun one, and obviously there were some shenanigans along with it.
Yeah, what are your thoughts on Javi Baez being a cheater?
Cheater.
I'm joking.
I wouldn't use that term at all.
I love Javi Baez and the way he plays. But there was a little bit of controversy. He was on second base. It was a first and second situation. Ground ball to Nolan Arenado. Arenado goes to hug or goes to tag Javi Baez. And Baez, who they know each other well, he greeted him with a hug. And some were saying that he was doing that to break up a double play, which technically he kind of was doing.
In a sense, but the best stuff I was seeing was that's the way to tackle a quarterback in the NFL now.
Yeah,
that's what,
that was...
that's what I saw on social media.
I think you needed a light kiss on the forehead, right, though, as well.
I mean, Arenado didn't... We kind of talked before we came on the air. Arenado didn't make the move to turn that double play, and you could tell, like, that was... He was going for that out.
Right.
So if he had intended to go turn that double play, there wouldn't have been that embrace the way it was, and he laughed about it. I don't think it was until his manager came out and was kind of like, wait a second, that he was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have just been fine with that.
Yeah, and Matt Vaskirjian, who's doing play-by-play for that game, one of the many broadcasts they had, they also had their their nerd ball kind of analytic broadcast as well, but for Vaskirjian, he was kind of just saying that you know, everything is overanalyzed in playoff baseball. Like, you don't know what's going to come up, what controversy could come up that you don't, that's not even on your radar entering the game. And that was definitely one of them, where it was just a friendly embrace that turned into a potential, you know,
It could have been worse than it was.
Absolutely. So
there could have been more of a hoopla.
This year you have Hugapalooza. Last year you have Archie Bradley's triple. Some really just crazy things have happened, and it's all been in the National League so far. You had game 163 that determined the order. The Rockies have been in Colorado Sunday, Los Angeles Monday, Chicago Tuesday. And now they're gonna,
so it's big for them. I mean, to travel like that, to change time zones, change mountains, ranges, altitudes. Altitudes. To change altitudes like that, I mean, and to come out and go 13 innings late into the night like that, big win for the Rockies.
Yeah, so Milwaukee's sitting pretty right now because they are slightly more rested and they didn't have to burn a bunch of their pitchers. But if you saw it on the flip side, Chicago, they were using a lot of their starters, kind of, you know, anticipating this really deep game, which happened, but they still did not come away with the win. So a lot of interesting stuff with that. Other topic we wanted to go over, the Arizona Diamondbacks. So they are a part of that National League West that has two playoff teams in there. I was at the press conference Monday with Torey Lovello, Mike Hazen, kind of putting a bow on the 2018 season. I feel like there's just a lot of uncertainty with the way, you know, there I wrote a very long post, you know, last week about just all the questions surrounding the roster. Mm-hmm. But I think none of those get answered until they figure out, are they going to make a playoff push here in the next 2 years, or is a rebuild necessary?
I don't necessarily think that a rebuild is necessary. I've seen a lot of scouts and articles lately in this last week or so that have been talking about the depth of the Diamondbacks farm system and how it's getting better and their player development is really improving. So I don't think that a rebuild is necessary. I think they have some of those tools in AAA even. I mean, you saw some of the guys that were able to make an impact here in this latter half, that last week of the season from AAA in Reno. So, I mean, I don't think a complete rebuild is necessary. I know it seems at the end of the season last year it was the same way. Mike Hazen, that last pitch is thrown, that last out is made, whether the Diamondbacks are on the winning end or the losing end of it, and he's ready to move on. He is ready to just look forward, and obviously there are some questions that he's not ready to answer. He doesn't know the answers to yet, but I think, I mean, with good cause, I think that there are, that free agent stuff is a lot to talk about, that Zach Greinke contract is a lot to talk about, Paul Goldschmidt's last remaining year on his contract. So I think that a rebuild isn't necessary, but there's definitely got to be some changes.
I think there are two sides to this coin. One is you're potentially losing your starting center fielder. You're potentially losing one of your aces in Patrick Corbin. Mm-hmm. I think you probably could get Pollock potentially back, but I think Corbin has pitched himself out of their price range. You're handcuffed by the Zach Greinke contract. Paul Goldschmidt has one more year on his very affordable deal. Mm-hmm. He's getting the most money of portion of that contract in this last year. It's still a deal at $14 million. So a lot's going to be changing. On the other hand, Mike Hazen had every opportunity to blow this team up when he came in, and they were coming off, what, like a 69-win season, and he kept the main pieces in there. But he was able to add Taijuan Walker. He was able to add Fernando Rodney, Jeff Mathis. Moves that didn't really move the needle, but they were crucial in that playoff run. So I could see it going either way. We're going to definitely be discussing this more over the offseason on our podcast, Diamonds in the Desert. I'm sure there will be a lot of content swirling around that with the winter meetings and you know, all of the sorts of content taking you all the way up through spring training. So it's going to be definitely not a boring offseason for the Arizona Diamondbacks. Coming up next, Brad is joined by Jake Plummer to preview ASU and Colorado, a big matchup in the Pac-12 South this weekend. That's coming up next on the Brad Sesmat Show.
Now let's turn our attention closer to Arizona State at Colorado this Saturday afternoon. Huge matchup in Boulder, and we've spared no expense here. We're going on the ground in Boulder to have our insight reporter extraordinaire, the one and only Jake Plummer from Boulder. ReadyList Pro, he's at it again, getting it done on the teaching end. The former Sun Devil star quarterback right there in Boulder, Colorado. It is good to see you, Jake. How are you?
I'm doing great, Brad. It's nice to see you. And as always, great to join your show.
Okay, so let's, before I get into ReadyList and some other things, what is the mood in Boulder this week for the Sun Devils up there? It's a first place battle. Who would have thought this 5 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, it's great. It's great for football. It's great for the scene here in Colorado. Paid attention, obviously. It's the hometown team here, so the paper talks a lot about the Buffs, so I'm pretty aware of what they've done so far. I don't put too much stock into the fact that their opponents are whatever their record is, 1-14 or whatever. You still got to go out and play and execute. You still got to go out and make plays when the time presents itself. And that's what the Buffs have been doing. You know, whether those teams that they beat continue to struggle or maybe have some turnarounds, this winning breeds confidence. A young quarterback in Montez, not young, but a quarterback in Montez that's gaining more confidence in his receivers and the guys around him. I see a great matchup. It's going to be a fun game, and they're excited here in Boulder, and as well, I'm sure, in Tempe for a game that should be a winnable game if ASU takes care of business, but both teams will be fighting hard for this one.
Jake Plummer with us via Skype from Boulder. Are you surprised with what's going on down here? with Herm so far. The win over Michigan State, close losses at Washington, San Diego State, a winning record as they go into South play. This hire was met with a lot of resistance, as I'm sure you're aware. What is your view of what's going on down here in Tempe and what you're hearing about the program?
I like what I see so far. You know, everybody responded with, you know, the typical social media negativity to the hire, which I have my own response to that and ruffled some feathers. But as a player and someone who's been in that building and gone through a coaching change and been a part of what they're trying to build in on any team, you know, I'm going to be positive and optimistic. And especially with a guy like Herm Edwards, whose track record speaks for himself, his respect and his, you know, his legacy up until now is basically impeccable. I mean, the guy's done a lot of great things on the field as a player, as a coach, also talking about the game. And when you watch games and you're in the studio examining and breaking down teams, you learn a lot about offense. You learn a lot about defense. You learn a lot about what it takes to be even a better coach. And we're seeing that. We're seeing him come in and assemble the right staff that's going to put these players in a position to succeed. You know, tough loss to San Diego State. You know, it's too bad. On the road, they didn't pull that one out. And again, against Washington, another close loss that came down to the wire. But those close losses can sometimes band a team, even make them closer, make them fight and work harder. And I think that you got a guy who's leading the charge in Herm that's a hard worker. He's there at 4:30 every morning. You got a D coordinator in Gonzalez that runs out, goes running in the heat to prove to his players, hey, if you're going to do it, I'm going to do it. So I like what I see down there. It seems to be they're building a nice, tight-knit group. Let's not be naive to the fact that the cupboards were pretty good when he came in. Todd Graham had done some good recruiting, brought in some good players. So there is a stable of players there that have helped change that program and become good young men. But now with adding Herm and his coaching staff, and then again what Manny's doing and what some of these young kids on defense are doing, and a running back like Benjamin, who's running hard, you know, those kind of things are infectious. And I like what I see so far.
No offense to Keith Poole, but if you had N'Keal Harry as one of your wide receivers back in the day, what kind of numbers do you think you would have put up? I'm not disrespecting any of your guys off that team, Jake, but come on.
No, Keith was, yeah, he's amazing. You know, I love to see N'Keal Harry, you know, earlier this year, I think it was against San Diego State, when he went back and returned a punt and gave him a little bit of life. I mean, here's a guy, when you watch him play, he's not catching the ball and getting a yard and going down. He's trying to make every play a big play. Now, you got to be careful with that mentality, but you don't want to stifle that. You want to let that kid keep going and tap into his greatness, which we're going to see. We have yet to see how good this kid can be. I hope that they continue to find creative ways to get him the ball. Alongside that, you got to have guys around him stepping up to take the pressure off. And Williams is a great receiver. We're seeing other guys get into the fold, making some plays. But, yeah, N'Keal Harry is any quarterback's, you know, dream come true, a guy with a huge catch radius, with speed, with breakaway speed, with game-breaking abilities that can basically turn your poor throw into a great catch and a great play. And, you know, I would never trade anybody, anyone in the world, for Keith Poole, number three. He was he didn't wear gloves. He caught the ball barehanded. That dude was a scrapper, a tough player, and no offense to N'Keal Harry. You might be the top five pick in the NFL, but I wouldn't trade you for Keith Poole. That was my guy. We had a connection, and it goes way deeper than just, you know, what you see these days. But I do like what N'Keal's doing, and I love Manny's mentality and his leadership. You see he's fiery, he's tough, he talks a little smack to the defense, he's getting after the guys. You know, the one thing that I do see when they pan to the sideline is a lot of guys sitting down when the defense is out on the field in big moments. I'd like to see those guys get up. You're part of a team. Get up, go cheer those guys on, let them know that it's important to you for them to get the ball back for you so you can go do your thing. And we're seeing that a little bit, but I think there's got to be a little bit more of that. And that comes from the leaders. That comes from Manny and those seniors, those guys that have been there a while that want to make a difference. And this is a great opportunity this week for them to go and show everybody, hey, 4-0 Colorado team, that's okay. We're a solid team with two losses. We still got to go take our claim of the lead in the South.
Jake Plummer with us from Boulder, ASU at Colorado this Saturday afternoon. That hat you have, what is the story there? What is that?
Well, this came in a little box from my big man, Juan Roque. You guys all listening maybe know, remember big old Juan Roque. He sent a hat out to a bunch of guys one at a time. You know, that was Bruce Snyder's, you know, motto that we lived and died by. And I hear Herm talking about it, and I hear it come out of his mouth a lot. And it really is a way to approach football, because not only just one at a time, you break it down to one day at a time, to one practice at a time, down to even one rep at a time. And, you know, it helps you focus on the moment, on the now, and not worry about what's happened or what may happen, but be just focused on what you're doing right now and try to do it to the best of your ability. So thank you, Juan, for the cap. I'm sporting that in support of my man, and a good remembrance out to a great coach of Bruce Snyder.
It's good stuff on Bruce Snyder, and I can only imagine Juan Roque right now. He's celebrating, saying that's my guy.
Oh, yeah. They're rolling around a dog in the backyard being happy, I hope.
Let's talk and switch gears over to what you're doing professionally. So you have done the broadcast thing. You are personally loving life in Colorado, doing the family thing. ReadyList Pro, you and I briefly touched on this a couple of years ago when you first put your toe in the water. This audience is primarily football-heavy fans. So walk us through this and how it's grown.
Yeah, it's been pretty exciting and something I didn't really plan on diving into 4 years ago when a buddy of mine, Chad Freehoff, he was the player of the year at Division II at the Colorado School of Mines, a really bright, really smart kid, an engineer who knew how to study and knew what it took to not only balance a football career, but also studying to become an engineer. So smart, smart kid who through 9 years or 7 years played on nine different teams trying to learn a big thick playbook. So in his travels and his times, he started researching how his teammates studied, came up with a concept similar to a Rosetta Stone for a foreign language, because all football is terms, terminology, nomenclature, X's and O's and routes and distances. And it really doesn't change much. It's just, there's a lot of it to have to memorize. And usually the names change from one coordinator to another. You can ask Manny about that. It's hard to, you know, associate some plays and rename them in your brain. And so this technology that we've developed really is really revolutionary. It's a game changer. It utilizes multiple learning styles to help players efficiently learn their playbook and hopefully after learning their playbook, step out on the field and play full speed. I always try to go 100%. Even if I didn't know what I was doing, I tried to go 100% because I felt that made me less prone to injury. And when players know where to go, they can go 100%. So we've created a tool that's all-encompassing for a playbook, for offensive playbooks. And so far, we've had a lot of great responses and some big-time teams at the top level using it all the way down to youth-level flag football teams using it. Most recently, we launched a app called ReadyList Youth. It's geared towards flag football, 4-on-4, all the way up to 11-on-11. And it can go offline, so coaches that our new offensive coordinator or a new coach can get our app. It has a preloaded playbook on it with all the best plays you could imagine. And they can go right out, have their kids study, test it, and they'll know where they stand. So for us, we're trying to save coaches and players time and give them that peace of mind when they step out on the field to go enjoy the game. Because I played football because it was fun. And, you know, I didn't always know what I was doing, but it was fun to go out there and play. And had I known more about what I was doing, I maybe would have had a little more success early on in my career, especially in the NFL. So we've created this and we've gotten it out in front of a lot of people. And, you know, any football fans or any football coaches, players out there in Arizona that have interest, go to ReadyListYouth.com, check it out, and let us know what you think. And if you want to try it out, we're more than willing to get you up and running.
You probably have some people knocking on your door wanting to invest some money in you on this one, I would think, with the growth of football.
Yeah, that's always a struggle there, trying to find the funds to keep this thing going. And in technology, as I'm learning, if you're not developing something new today, you're falling behind. So we're on it. We're working hard. We're growing, and we're fully scalable. And it's exciting. I'm an entrepreneur in the tech field, which I never thought I would be. I'm more of a green grass, you know, grass stains out in the dirt kind of guy, but in this day and age, we're putting more and more on our athletes at a younger age. And if they don't have a coach, for one, that has the knowledge to teach them the ins and outs of whether it's football, lacrosse, soccer, hockey, any sport with a playbook, you know, if the coaches aren't prepped and ready or ready to get these kids up to speed and teach them the right way to go play the game, then the game suffers and the athletes suffer and they drop out, maybe don't play sports anymore. So we're trying to just keep those numbers up, raise the knowledge level across all sports eventually as we grow. And along the way, make great connections and meet people and provide them with a tool to make their sport of choice that much more enjoyable.
Proud of you. You've reinvented yourself. That's what life's all about. That's good stuff. The party is at Jake's house before the game on Saturday. So for the Sun Devil fans, are you going to the game in all seriousness? Are you going to the game?
Yeah, there's a bunch of people coming up, and I actually will be down in Tempe this week for a meeting with a youth organization down there. You know, I'm working. I'm fully vested in this thing right now. I've invested myself and co-founder and trying to build this thing. So I'm doing all I can to connect the dots and put people in the right spot. And I'll see a bunch of old buddies and old teammates that are up here and get up to the game, at least for most of it, go see what's going on up there. And I've never been to a CU game yet, so it's exciting to see the Devils come to town, of course.
Good stuff, Jake. Appreciate the time as always. Best of luck.
Hey, Brad, I appreciate it. Thank you.
There's Jake Plummer joining us via Skype from his home in Boulder, Colorado. As I said, Eric spared no expense on ASU Colorado. We found the best, and that's Jake. It's good stuff. Ready List Youth, you can check it out. Ready List Pro, the Ready List program with Jake Plummer. However you Google it, you will find it. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. Time now to check in with the Hall of Famer, senior fantasy analyst, NFL Media, NFL Network, the King of Kings, I guess, Michael Fabiano. How are you?
I don't know about that. I think Triple H is the King of Kings. Are you a wrestling
Triple
fan?
H, I am. I am.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the King of Kings? Yeah.
That's good. I won't take that title from him then.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't take anything from him.
No.
I'd get beaten up.
Get beat up, thrown in the corner. All right,
exactly.
This is turning into running back central today. We're just at that point in the season, and especially with the news of Le'Veon Bell looking at coming back in week 7. And so a lot of the mailbag is, what do I do with James Conner, and what is the strategy with Le'Veon Bell? So let's just start with that.
I don't know that that's accurate, that he's coming back in week 7 or 8. I'm not sure. From the people that I've talked to, that's not something that's guaranteed at this point. You're sort of in a holding pattern. You're playing the matchups with Connor. In his last three games, his numbers have all dropped. The Steelers' offense didn't look good against the Ravens this past week. And I do like the matchup this week, though, against Atlanta, so he's probably going to be someone that you're going to be playing. It's status quo at this point. I mean, you can't trade Le'Veon because I don't know how much value you're going to get with him, because there's still question marks about whether or not he is truly coming back in week 7 or 8. And I don't know if you want to trade for him, because – what are you going to potentially get? I mean, he's not going to be on the field for at least a couple of more weeks. So for me, unless someone out there loves Le'Veon, and maybe you have Le'Veon and James Conner, and you can package Le'Veon and James Conner and get, for example, Saquon Barkley, then maybe I think about it. Otherwise, I'm probably just status quo, just waiting and hoping that he's coming back soon.
Okay, let's run through a bunch of these other backs. Leonard Fournette, what's the view from you?
The view is that he's become a huge headache, and the fact that he's dealing with a hamstring injury is now going to keep him out, it looks like, for a couple of weeks. And if I'm an owner of Fournette, I'm frustrated. Hopefully I picked up T.J. Yeldon off the waiver wire as a handcuff, or maybe drafted him as a handcuff, because you need, and the Jaguars need, to let this injury heal up. It's the same thing with Dalvin Cook.
Mm-hmm.
If they keep running him out there and giving him limited snaps, I mean, not that the Vikings care about our fantasy football team, neither the Jaguars, but still, I mean, it's not good for the players either. It's not good for the players behind them. They can't get into a rhythm if they're going to keep utilizing these guys on snap counts. So bad matchup for Dalvin this week, too, against the Eagles. So he's sort of a risk-reward proposition at this point, too. But in terms of Fournette, you've got to get insurance for him. Hopefully you did get T.J. Yeldon.
What's your view of the – I'm getting questions about the Saints with Ingram and Kamara and short yardage. It looks to me it's like it's Ingram, but what's your view of the Saints running back situation for fantasy players?
Well, I mean, you know, Kamara's not going to keep up this touchdown pace. It's ridiculous at this point. So you're going to see Mark Ingram utilized. On early downs, you're going to see Mark Ingram utilized down near the goal line. But remember, these two backs were on the same field very often last season, mm-hmm. and they both performed very well. So is Ingram going to eat into some of the touchdown opportunities of Kamara? Yeah. But is it going to be enough to keep Kamara from producing monster numbers? No, because, I mean, the guy's basically a running back who's a wide receiver. Let's put it that way. He had 20 targets 2 weeks ago. So no concerns for me. If I had Kamara, would I rather not have Ingram back? Of course, because, you know, you want to be a touch hog. But he'll be fine. Both guys will be fine.
I think the sorting out of Atlanta is the same sort of deal with Freeman and Coleman.
Yeah, well, see, when Freeman comes back, I mean, he's going to be more of the lead back mm-hmm. than Coleman was. And actually, Coleman lost touches to Ito Smith this past week, which put a dent into his fantasy potential. So depending on whether or not Freeman is back this week, we shall see. If he is back, you're going to start him as an RB2. And then Coleman sort of moves back into that flex starter slot, maybe a guy that you're not starting if the matchup is not good, but this week it is a good matchup.
Okay, talk me off the ledge here. We're talking with Michael Fabiano, senior fantasy analyst, NFL Media, NFL Network, the Hall of Famer. And that is, anybody in their right mind who thinks what Trubisky did last week against a bad Buccaneers defense, I am not buying this long term. And there are people that are all excited in the league that I'm in trying to get him. And I'm like, go for it. Knock yourself out. I don't see it. What about you?
I'm right there with you. Because, I mean, what did he have, 2 touchdowns and 5 turnovers in his first few games? I mean, he wasn't that good. And the Buccaneers defense is just bad. I mean, it's historically bad. I mean, this is like, you know, it's like giving out Halloween candy to kids. It's ridiculous. They're giving out fantasy points hand over fist. The defense is just bad. Maybe they make some adjustments in the bye week. I'm not sure, but I don't buy into Trubisky. I still think he's just a QB2. And you're telling me that when Trubisky comes back and he's got games against Miami on the road and Miami's pass defense is pretty good, or against New England or against the Jets, you're going to play him? You're going to play him against Minnesota? You're going to play him against the Rams later in the season? No. I mean, so I wouldn't pick him up, especially considering they're on a bye. And, hell, I'd rather have Jameis Winston, to be quite honest with you.
Watson or Mahomes from the mailbag this week?
See, this is – and, you know, people on Twitter are – you know, Twitter's kind of a mean place sometimes, Brad.
Yes.
And people
yes.
are always asking me, why do you talk about starting Mahomes? Because I get tons of questions about whether or not to start him because he was drafted as a QB2, and a lot of people have another really good quarterback. So this week I'm going Watson over Mahomes because of the matchup, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I'm benching Patrick Mahomes, because Mahomes has been lights out. Now, this is going to be the ultimate test. This is going to be fun, right? I mean, when you've got Mahomes and that offense going on all cylinders, they're playing the Jaguars, who have maybe the best defense in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, you know, it's one of those situations where you're going to be very interested to see what happens and what Mahomes can do against an elite defense like Jacksonville. But there I'd go Watson.
A couple other questions. Seattle's running back situation. I think these are the Rashad Penny guys that are coming out of the woodwork saying what happened.
Yeah, well, that is a good question, and I don't understand why the Seahawks drafted a running back in the first round if they're not going to use him when he's got a chance to be a featured back. It was weird that Mike Davis came in and was the better back, and it was a great matchup because the Cardinals, as you guys know, can't stop the run.
Yeah.
So now Pete Carroll comes out, and mind you, this is a weak move from Carson having 34 touches and having a really good game against the Cowboys, right? And everyone's like, oh, Carson, finally they get him the ball. Then he's hurt, doesn't play. Mike Davis comes in, looks good, and Pete Carroll says, Mike Davis is going to factor into the rotation in that backfield now, too. Thanks a lot. So now you're looking at a backfield situation that's a mess. The Rams defense, you don't want to mess with them. Game script is going to be on the negative side for Carson. He went from having his value starting to rise to having it tank real quick.
Anything else before you get out of here this week that caught your eye, Michael?
Everything catches my eye. Are you kidding me?
No,
everything catches my eye. Here's the one thing that catches my eye.
Yeah.
The quarterback position this year is ridiculous. So Patrick Mahomes scored 22 points against Denver on Monday night. He was the 12th highest scoring quarterback. 12th! So in a 10-team league, he wasn't even a starter. I mean, it's insane. Like right now, you have to go into a week thinking, if my quarterback gets me 18 or less, it's not really a great week.
No, it's true.
They're all putting up ridiculous numbers. And don't be afraid. And you know, I get it. Like, you know, you hate to bench Aaron Rodgers. You hate to bench Drew Brees. You know, typically you're not going to do that. But I've got Aaron Rodgers and Matt Ryan this week. I'm playing Matt Ryan. You know, if I've got Mahomes this week and I've got Watson, like that one question was, I'm starting Watson. Like, you can play the matchups. Like, I'm not touching Russell Wilson this week, which means he'll probably score 20 points. But I'm not touching him because the Rams have owned him. So, like, I'd rather have Blake Bortles over Russell Wilson. So don't be afraid to play the matchups, because the league, the way that it's set up right now, right or wrong, because I think some of these rules are ridiculous. I mean, they can't even hug a guy and they're getting calls.
Yeah.
It's all pro offense. I mean, pretty soon it's going to be like the Arena League out there, and people are going to be throwing for 400 or 500 yards a game. How many quarterbacks right now are on pace for 40 touchdowns? I think it's like half a dozen. It's crazy. So don't be afraid to play the matchups with the quarterbacks. I mean, clearly, typically, you're going to be starting your studs, but don't be afraid to bench an Aaron Rodgers for a Patrick Mahomes. Don't be afraid to bench a Russell Wilson, who's struggling right now, for a guy like Blake Bortles, because the matchups are very important right now. And again, the way that the league is set up, it's helping quarterbacks and it's helping offenses.
As always, the Hall of Famer delivers. Thanks, Michael. Talk next week.
Go Yankees. We'll see you, pal.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Got to get that in there. Michael Fabiano, NFL Network, Senior Fantasy Analyst, NFL Media. Always good to catch up with Michael. Sports360AZ.com. Time now for Talk to the Lopes. Every week we talk Grand Canyon University Athletics, and this week it is big. It is Midnight Madness. It is getting started on the basketball front. And to talk more about it, Taylor Griffin, Director of In-Game Entertainment, the sixth Midnight Madness planned, orchestrated, and produced by Taylor. It's pretty heady stuff, first and foremost. Thanks for coming on Talk to the Lopes. How are you, Taylor?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm just fabulous. So another year, another Midnight Madness. How is it that this has come to you? How is it that this is another year of you doing this?
Yeah, well, kind of funny. When I was first a student at Midnight Madness, it was actually called, or at GCU, sorry, Midnight Madness was actually called Fan Fest.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't held at midnight. It was held earlier in the afternoon, and Brian Mueller kind of said that he didn't want to do the event anymore, and he just wasn't really a fan at the time. And so I approached him and said, hey, we need to do this event. It just needs to be done correctly. And he said, all right, well, I'll put you in charge of it then. And so that was a lot of pressure when he said that. He said, kind of, you have 1 year to prove to me that this event is something that we can continue to do. So I had to come up with a pitch and put a whole PowerPoint presentation together and kind of pitch my idea of what I thought would work well. And got the approval the first year, and first year went great. It went way better than we thought it was going to go.
Mm-hmm.
We had Dan Marley, obviously, it was his first year. And we went with kind of a party Saturday Night Fever type theme. And Dan showed up in like a 70s leisure suit and his own platform shoes, which was hilarious because we asked him where he got the platform shoes, and he said, oh, I already owned these. that was pretty funny, and I knew right then and there that he'd be game for anything.
Okay, so you just threw a lot at me. Let me back up here. The president says we're not – no, it's fine. The president says, well, we're not doing this. And you're a student at the time, junior or senior?
Well, I had just gotten hired on full time that summer.
So you just graduated
During the summer. Yeah, I just graduated, and it was during the summer when he kind of said that he didn't really want to have the event anymore.
Okay, so take me back to, was this a you bump into him over lunch in his office out on the walkway, and he's like, and do you just in your gut say, I need to talk to the president and tell him we need to do this? That's what I want to know.
Well, gotcha. Well, my boss at the time, her name is Helen Bleach. I was working for Helen Bleach in events, and she kind of told me that this is what Brian was thinking. So I didn't tell him face to face. I told her, I was like, this is something that we need to do.
Mm.
The students need to have this event. And she said, all right, well, I'll set up a meeting with Brian and you can kind of talk to him and see what he says. So when I met with him that first time, I said, hey, this is something that we need to do. I really think the students would enjoy an event like this. It just needs to be done well. And so after that first meeting was when he was like, all right, put something together, and I'll see you in a couple weeks, and I'll see if I like your idea.
Okay, so the new facility had just come online, or were you still in Antelope Gym? I'm trying to think back on that.
Right, we were, I think it was like our second year in the arena.
In the arena, okay.
At that point.
Sure.
Yeah, in the GCU arena, the new arena.
Okay, so you had bells and whistles to work with the arena. What I want to know next is, did you sit on the floor and throw darts into the ceiling and say, well, we need a theme? Like, where did you decide to go? Because the theme every year is taken off. I mean, you've had Harleys right. come, you guys have had Harleys come rolling through. You've tied in the girls team. I mean, you've grown this into, just as GCU with its fans, the Havocs and all that, have grown into this national right. brand. And so I'm just fascinated. How did you decide to throw themes, and what did it take, and how much buy-in did Dan have on all this?
Well, the themes that I've come up with kind of mirror what is happening in, like, with the men's basketball world every year.
Mm-hmm.
So the first year was kind of, it was a party themed because we had just decided to make the transition to Division I. So we had just announced that we were transitioning to Division I, so... it was kind of like, all right, it's a party. We got to, like, we're going to have a fun time doing this. This will be along for the ride. The second year was kind of a Star Wars space theme.
Yeah.
And,
remember that?
The idea was that now that we were accepted, to make the transition to D1, now we needed the best players from around the country to help us combat the evil empire and the Western Athletic Conference. So the idea was that our mascot, yeah, traveled the galaxy as Han Solo and picked up these different players from different planets and whatnot, and he kind of formed the GCU team for that year. And then the year after that was kind of our last year in a transition, and it was kind of Mad Max themed. So it was kind of like, it was our last year, it was the end times, it was the apocalypse. We decided to name it the Apocalopes because it just kind of worked a little too well that we had to go with that.
That's great. That's
so
great.
Each theme kind of mirrors what we're going with, or what we're experiencing that year, that season moving forward.
So what is the theme this year?
So the theme this year is like Batman, DC Comics, Batman and Wonder Woman.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
The Joker, AKA our mascot Thunder.
Yeah.
Has kind of taken over campus and taken over the arena, and he's captured Superman and Aquaman and the Flash and the Green Lantern, and we kind of need Batman and Wonder Woman to save us and to get the arena back to its normal state.
And Batman and Wonder Woman are the coaches.
Yeah, Batman will be Dan, and Nicole will be Wonder Woman.
Oh boy, oh boy! Now that sounds fun.
Yeah.
This has, and so yeah, do you have people fun. Camping out already for Midnight Madness?
Well, I would be shocked if anybody was camping today.
But, I was going to say, with the weather, yeah.
Leading up to to this week, a few weeks ago, we were kind of talking to students and kind of figuring out what they were planning. We had students tell us that they were planning on camping Monday, so yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
The storm obviously put a damper on that a little bit, but if it clears up, then we should have students probably camping tomorrow, maybe the day after. But yeah, they started camping last year. We had, I think it was like 380 students camp out of nowhere. It just kind of became a thing. It was kind of one of my goals was to always have students try to camp out from Midnight Madness. So
yeah,
now they are camping out, I got to figure out a new goal.
Just so we're clear, if they're really diehards, they go pitch a tent in the rain. Come on. I mean, let's just see what you're
exactly.
really let's just see what you're really all about. We'll give you
exactly.
We'll give you X if you go pitch in the rain. That tells us you're really all in.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We're talking with Taylor Griffin, director of in-game entertainment. Talk to the Lopes. So, Friday night, what is it in terms of the who, what, where, when, why, how for fans that want to come out and be a part of Midnight Madness this week?
Well, for students, the doors open at 11:15. The event's not open to the public. It's really just an event that's geared towards
the
our
students. Okay.
And since the Havocs are kind of a national recognizable group, every decision that I make, I try to cater to them as much as possible. So I try to put the Haddocks first, and if it's something that they like, if it's something that they enjoy, something that they buy into, then it's probably a good idea to go with. So kind of most decisions that I make for Midnight Madness, I kind of cater towards what I think the students will appreciate, what I think they'll have a fun time participating in.
Sure.
And all that kind of stuff.
What about you here now? How many years you've been doing this since we said off the top? This is six.
Right.
Is GCU your home? I'm sure people have tried to approach you and say, hey, you've done it there. Why not the NBA or why not NHL? I'm not trying to get you out of here, but it's very impressive what you've done. So
thank you.
Yeah.
We have a lot of people that help make this event happen. I'm kind of the one who has to think about it year-round just because it's become my responsibility. But there are a lot of people at GCU who I'm very thankful are willing to help with this event and willing to help put it together. So we have buy-in from pretty much every department on campus, which is a lot of fun to see. But yeah, I started at GCU in 2008 as a freshman. Played volleyball for GCU and played there from 2008 to 2012. And then graduated and now running Midnight Madness and getting entertainment for all of athletics, which is a lot of fun.
Cool.
It's a really fun job.
Cool. Well, it's very impressive to visit with you. Nicely done. I can't sneak in, is what you're saying. I can't show up like a side door on Saturday night or Friday night and watch.
If you did sneak in, I'm really distracted at that point with other stuff. So I can't really get mad if you show up.
That's right. If you see a big 6'8 stiff walking around, I'm not a basketball player anymore. That would be me. thanks, Taylor. Good stuff. Appreciate it.
Great. Thank you.
And that is Talk to the Lopes for this week.